Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, let me tell you something funny, yeah? I understand what they mean by when the Ramadan slump comes. Today, I felt it. And I've got a resolution for this. Are you here? Are you ready for the gems?
Yeah, go on.
You can already tell what this episode's going to be like. Anyway, my resolution is basically, you've got to remember Allah in some form of way, either Quran, Salah, or Istighfar, or Salawat. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You've got to remember Allah every 2 hours.
Why every 2 hours?
Otherwise, you're going to go downhill. And also, you can't. I'm telling you now, this works for me. This works for me. The days that I'm fasting and I'm just at home in bed on my phone.
That you're fasting?
Yeah, let's just say...
That you're chilling, you're doom scrolling while fasting.
Exactly, doom scrolling, doing whatever I need to do. And then I wake up and I'm like, shit, already 4 hours has gone. And I've just been scrolling. I haven't done any sort of memorization.
But what if the algorithm's supporting you to remember Allah?
After a while, it won't. It will go against you. So my point is, then you start thinking, right, before you were very eager to pray on time, and then you're thinking, oh, let me just give it 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The moment you get that thought of 5 minutes, you've got to rise.
Rise from the ashes.
And you've got to remember Allah, and then you've got to do what you've got to do. Sometimes, that is the way to save yourself from the slump.
Sometimes I get up from wudu like this, like,
oh! What, just the sudden...
It's not like a hurt. It's like it's an angry rise because I'm like
awakening.
It's like I'm leaving my comfort, and then I go like this.
It's good.
Storm to the toilet.
You have to.
But you know what? Angry with you is better than no with
you. Indeed. And you know what that is? You are fighting your nafs. You're fighting that little cow. Bringing you down.
Fighting the little demons.
I would call her a lovely word, but I can't say it on here.
What your nafs?
Yeah.
If you could name your nafs, what would you name her?
A slag.
No, like an actual name.
My nefs would be called Hudaya. Hudaifa. Huda.
What? Are you alright?
What? Do you want my nefs to be called Susan? Like, what do you want?
I was actually gonna say my nefs would be called, yeah. My nefs would actually be called
Phoebe.
Sunshine.
No. No, it bloody wouldn't.
Why can I not
your
name
my nefs?
Why?
You.
Because should I tell you why? Because sometimes she's radiating. She's on my side. And then sometimes she disappears.
When she's not on your side.
When she's not on my side, she's disappeared. She's not strong. Do you know what I mean? But when she's like beaming, when like the sun is beaming, she's like contorn.
Oh, so your nefs must be really nice.
No, my nefs is a terrible, terrible person.
In control.
She hasn't been on my side. And therefore, she's been controlling me. So when she's...
No, she can't control
when
me.
When she's controlling me, it's like when the sun's setting, it's kind of dark.
Mm.
But when I'm controlling her, it's like there's a beam of light.
I'm calling mine Jolene.
Jolene.
My nefs is going to fight your nefs. Come out. Let's
Sunshine
go.
Versus Jolene.
I just thought Jolene because my nefs, I just feel like she's driving the car at the moment and I don't want her to. And I feel like my nefs is very carefree. She has fun.
Who is Jolene?
Jolene's just a normal woman.
So the story behind Dolly Parton's classic song. Okay, ready? Allah. Allah. Okay, Dolly Parton. Okay, so Dolly Parton wrote Jolene in 1973 based on two real life events that happened to her. The first was when she met a young fan named Jolene at one of her concerts. She was so impressed by her beauty and name, so decided to use it for the song. She told NPR, oh, okay, fine.
Exactly.
The second was inspired that Jolene was when Dolly Parton felt jealous of a red headed bank teller who flirted with her husband, Carl Dean.
Anyway.
Why would your nephs be called Jolene?
I just feel like my nephs, if we picture it, she's like, she's got her hair down, she's in a convertible, she's just driving by the sea, she thinks she can control me, but I'm trying to grab her back in and put a hijab on her head. So I've called her Jolene for that reason.
My nephs is called Faris.
What?
And I'll tell you why my nephs is called Faris. So the reason why I think Faris would be an ideal name for your nephs is because, so when you're in a carriage and, you know, there's a horse, the horse usually steadies your carriage, right? So basically, you are riding in the carriage, but you're steadying the horse. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the horse is going. So obviously, Faris means horse in Somali.
So you're the horse?
I'm not the horse.
Are you the guy controlling the horse?
I'm the jockey.
Okay. Oh, good. See that? Good analogy.
Good analogy
I
there.
I love that.
Right now, I would say I've got a steady control of Faris.
Yeah.
Steady, mm-hmm. Although further control can be exerted in certain areas of Faris, i.e. the legs, you know, the body.
Guys, this has gone. It's gone.
The head.
The analogy is gone.
It's certain okay. areas have yet to be controlled, but the heart of Faris is under grip.
It's the way she said grip. Okay. Well, good afternoon, evening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Oversharers podcast, where you've joined our Ramadan series in which we talk about what the names of our nefs are. Can you tell us a few of your nefs' names in the comments section? That'd be very great. Thank you very much. Okay, so
moving on swiftly.
Welcome to the
show. How are you, Hada?
I'm very great, thank you very much.
How's your nefs?
My nefs is a little cow, but I'm controlling her. I think the biggest test comes when Ramadan is over and I'm back
to... Your nefs is going to be like, got you.
See you later. But I won't do that because this month is a steady month and I'm trying my best to keep firm.
And may Allah continue to keep you firm. How have things been this week? How are you feeling spiritually and emotionally, Hada?
Spiritually, I'm a little bit up and down. Oh my God, guys, let me tell you, yesterday I had a bit of a wobble emotionally. I was just crying.
Oh,
isn't that so random?
That means you have a very soft heart.
Oh, do you think so? I was crying because I saw, shall I be honest with you guys?
Oh, here we go.
I was crying because I got my credit card bill.
And it was it really, really that scared. Bad?
No, it's not that bad. It's actually going down. But the reason why I got my credit card bill is because I got my credit card bill and then I was listening to a talk about riba.
Of course.
And it just let...
Just hit
the
you.
The floodworks came. Guys, riba is so bloody scary. May Allah obviously forgive the ones of us that have used riba without knowing.
And the ones that have with knowing.
May Allah forgive us because obviously Allah is all forgiving. But I'm genuinely telling you guys now, riba is an actual madness. Like it's actually one of the major sins in Islam. And it just really scared me because all I could see was the bill on my phone and the talk in my ears. And I just started weeping.
Oh dear, do you know what?
I know. But then it wasn't just that. I was crying about a lot of things, actually. And then today I was completely fine. And then I thought, oh my God, is my period coming again? But then maybe it was just my emotions.
Shall I tell you what randomly made me cry on the way to Sainsbury's yesterday? I was wearing my sunglasses so no one could see me. Off the back of your advice last week, where you said, you know, Omar Seleman's Why Me series is so great. I was like walking to Sainsbury's. There was something he said that I was listening to. I can't remember if it was like episode. You know, it gets a bit deep when you get to number 14 and that. It's when it starts hitting you. So he was talking about how like, I can't remember if it was like the power of something. Now, let me just cast my mind back to yesterday and why I got upset. Because you know, when he talks, it's very airy, fairy, softy.
Very emotional.
Very emotional. And it's also quite vague as well. But then you start thinking about something.
Do you think it's vague?
I do. Not, no. A lot of the stuff that he says is very intentional and like you can see that he touches on Quran and Sunnah. Do you know what I mean? But then like sometimes, I don't know, he just starts talking and then you start thinking about
your life.
Your life.
Yeah.
right? So then I'm like thinking about something, and then I just started, just made me sad.
Go on, be honest with us. What made you cry?
No, I can't.
No, you've got to. I told you mine. Someone's getting nervous. She's doing my tics.
Okay, what made me cry? Okay, so you know how he said that every single person divergent paths, but ultimately everyone's facing the same issues. And I don't know, I can't remember what he was getting at, but something about him saying that everyone is connected, but going through like different things, even though those things are in some way connected in the grand scheme of things, just made me so sad. And I just, you know, it makes your problem seem a little bit smaller in comparison. And then I started thinking about like the people of Gaza, and I was just like, how can I complain about anything when
they're going through the biggest test
where they can't even find, they're eating grass, like, do you know what I mean? I just started thinking like very in terms of just like the wider context of just how humans are suffering all over the world, and like, and then I just started thinking about in my own. So you know, you start thinking about your own problems, and you're like, what are my problems?
But I mean, your problems are valid as well, because I'm not saying your own
it's not invalid. I'm not invalidating
but
my
it's
problems.
It's the comparison that you make.
But my problems are, I would say, they reflect like where I am
in life.
In my life, do you know what I mean? It's like relative to where I am. At this current time in this country, whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's relative to certain things. But then when you look at the comparison with problems of other people relative to where they are, and the situation in Gaza is just one situation. In the East, everyone is more or less poor.
Mm-mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I just think we are so lucky.
We've got so many blessings. It's unreal. I'm crying about a credit card.
Do you know what I mean? It just made me so sad. I just burst out crying in outside Sainsbury's, and then I had to like compose myself.
I feel like that's a good thing though, because it keeps you in check as well as a human being, because you recognize the privilege that you have, and then you're also grateful to Allah in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, without you having to say, oh, Allah, even though you should, but I'm saying, generally speaking, because you have
the foresight.
Yeah, just to be able to reflect on your own experience and compare it to someone else in a less advantaged situation, that's a really good thing to have.
Yeah, mate, we're so self-absorbed, though. Usually I'm the biggest narcissist when it comes to my own problems, I swear to God. But yeah, I was like, whoa, you know.
You know what made me really sad recently? And I think this is something I've learned about myself while listening to this Why Me series, is the fact that I've got no patience when it comes to the things that I want in terms of my du'as. And Omar Suleiman was, I think it was yesterday's episode before.
I know exactly what episode you're talking
about.
Yeah,
and it just really, really shook me, because I was like, but essentially what he said was, the dua that you make, Allah might not accept it, because whatever you want in your life at that moment might not be so good for you, to the point where Allah might not accept it, because he wants to save you for something bad that could happen because of that dua that you made. So let's say I wanted to be the most, I'm just giving you examples, not what I want to be. Let's say I wanted to be like the most famous surgeon ever in the whole world. And I'm currently a doctor, and I have the capacity to be that surgeon. And I'm constantly making this dua, ya Allah, let me get to this level. And then Allah doesn't give it to you. And then like, you're looking at your peers who probably have gotten to that level, and they're living the life that you basically want.
Yeah.
And Allah's not giving you that life. And then you start becoming impatient. At times you start questioning Allah. You start questioning the fact, does he hate me?
Why
is
he answering
my dua? Or sometimes some people can become really resentful of Allah. What's going on? But the idea is, there's a reason why your dua is not answered. And that dua might be saving you from something else. Or Allah might have something else better for you.
But another thing that Omar said is, basically Allah might answer your dua in a different way.
Exactly.
He might save one of your people then from the fire. He might like stop your mum from being hit by a car or something. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
It's crazy.
There's other ways your dua is getting answered.
So it's like just to have the idea of having tawakkal in Allah, like that, I always knew that. Oh, Connor, we always learn that stuff. But it's like actually practicing tawakkal.
But that's, it doesn't show how easy it is to fall into like ingratitude.
Yeah, definitely. It's so easy to just be like, why are you not answering my... I'm not even going to ask.
Allah's probably looking at you like, I know and you don't know.
Yeah, I know more than you.
I know something you don't. Sorry, that Why did we just go into song?
I know something you know.
That just came into my... That little TikTok jingle came into my head. But it's just funny. I never realised how easy it is to be an ungrateful person. Like, every time I complain about something, I'm like, crap.
It's not that deep. Honestly, it's not that deep. So my two things that I'm taking away from this Ramadan is to practice tawakkal and also to always, I think I'm a bit of a pessimist, like I always, and I think you might see this in me, like whenever I think about stuff or like the future, I always think of like the negative first of like what could go wrong.
Mm.
I never think of like, even this podcast, I always think, oh my God, what if we don't do so well? What if I'm embarrassing? Do you know what I mean?
But who cares?
What if this podcast takes you to Jannah? Like, you don't know.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like my idea of always thinking negatively is something I really need to work on. And like thinking positive of Allah, because Allah said, whatever you think of me, I will always think of you that way. So it's like you've got to, I think that's it or something else. I don't know. But like you've got to be positive in your idea of the way you think about Allah, like Allah will accept my dua, like he wants the best for me. Like you can't always think, oh, you can't always be stuck in that.
Yeah, in slump. That why me? Why not
yeah,
me?
Yeah, like why is it not happening? So yeah.
Anyway, should we read some excerpts from the book, The Power of Dua? There is a book that some of you may already know called The Power of Dua.
Why was that in my head right now, that jingle?
Because I said it earlier.
Oh, did you?
Also, this is The Power of Love.
The Power of Dua.
And it's by Alia Umrayan. Alia doesn't know this, but we're about to meet her.
I know.
On Friday.
Hello, Alia.
Hi, Alia. I'm Kultur.
I'm Heather.
And we're going to meet you on Friday. So there are some really, really good chapters in this book about developing your dua, the differences in like the best time to make dua, mm-hmm. and how to essentially just transform your dua. Mm-hmm. Do you think transforming your dua means that it's more likely to be accepted?
You never know. There is a method to doing your dua.
There is a method.
You praise Allah.
Yeah.
You praise the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Yeah.
You do your dua and then you praise Allah and you praise the Prophet again.
Yes.
It's a sandwich method.
But also there are specific times that you can make dua where there is a guarantee that there will be an acceptance of that dua. Now the acceptance of that dua may not manifest in how you envision it in your mind.
Might come in other ways.
Might come in other ways. So don't be disheartened if you don't see it in the way that you manifested it in your imperfect little brain. So developing your dua... Often, she says, I find myself in awe of how Allah understands how delicately human we are. And why would he not? He is the creator. Truly, he is the Lord, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim. Your Lord knows how tiring life can become. He knows the hustle. He knows the pangs of the heart, the worries and the concerns. He knows that you just need a moment to catch your breath. He knows that your giving is so often greater than your receiving. And with that knowledge, he has gifted you tahajjud. Tahajjud is a spiritual breakaway. It does not require you to book a ticket. You don't need to travel anywhere. You just need to take a step, albeit quite a tired one. But look what you get in return. A most special meeting with your Lord, who descends to the lowest heaven to hear and respond to your request.
I love it.
The value of making dua at the best time. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, when a half or third of the night has passed, Allah descends to the lowest heavens. And how can he not? He cares, he, referring to Allah, cares for you through the days and the nights when you are not calling out to him. So imagine then the way Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim deals with you when you do. And when you do, distraught from a previous storm, drenched and disheveled as you stand within a current storm, or apprehensive about a storm that is brewing. I felt like that before. He wants you to arrive at the door of dua, knowing with certainty that his merciful embrace awaits you. Allah's constant reminders of his mercy are given because he wants your heart to focus on this throughout the many times of need you will experience in your life. Through this focus, Ar-Rahman also wants you to perceive the events that led to your state of need as coming from his abundant and overflowing love and compassion. He wants you to see that though the rain is heavy and the winds are fierce, by focusing on his mercy, your storm was decreed not from his wrath, but from divine love, clearing and washing away that which is no longer needed so that you may grow. The storms in your life are in fact him watering you, bringing you to true life and faith. The human eye often focuses on the apparent downpour and destruction a storm creates, but a shift in focus towards his mercy means the eyes of the soul find the good in the storm. Allah wants you to trust him and all the ways he is merciful, even if it does not make sense at the time.
That's exactly what I was saying. You've just got to trust Allah.
Even when you don't think that he's on your side.
He is.
He's always on your side.
I'm telling you. Wasn't that lovely?
That was lovely. So that's the book, The Power of Dua by Alia Umrayan, who we're going to meet on Friday.
Hello, Alia.
Hi, Alia. If you're listening to this podcast, we love you.
I doubt.
We're going to buy your book.
Right, just before we get into my story of Morsa that I promised you all, right, I just wanted to talk about something real quick, okay? Because, you know, Colton's usually the conspiracy theorist, but this time it's me.
You bloody what?
It's me, and I said it.
Ding, ding, ding. Welcome to the other side.
Welcome to the club, darling. So what the thing that I'm basically seeing... Yeah, it's, I watched this video where Mohammed Hijab was talking about how the end of times is basically here, right? I know,
he said that.
He actually said that. Then he came up with a series of hadiths that I'm not going to say on here because I need to verify if they're true. Not that I'm saying he isn't, you know.
If they're like
Sahih Bukhari. Basically.
Hassan. Yes, graded Sahih.
Yes, yes, yes. I need to feel. But basically, anyway... I'm not even going to mention the hadiths because I need to verify them. But he was talking about the end of times. And he basically started, someone else asked him a question about the current Palestine, you know, Israel situation and how that can, you know, correlate to the end of times. And he was like, obviously, there's not any major things that you are going to find in the hadiths. But they started talking about how, I'm going to say, right-wing Zionists,
right,
or people that believe in the third temple being created,
right,
are basically going to do this ritual.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
With the red heifers. So the red heifers are a sort of cow that's like ginger. It's a ginger cow.
The really pretty ones.
It's really pretty, actually. Yeah. It's a very ginger cow. And apparently they need to be three to 4 years old. All of their fur needs to be red. They can't have one patch of anything else.
Sometimes you get ones with patches of white.
Mm. And they can't have gotten pregnant. They need to be a woman. So they couldn't find this calf, let's say, or this little cow for like 2,000 years. And they found a few of them now in Texas and America. So they've flown them over from America to Israel, where they're keeping them in a very secret location. And they've created this, you guys can see this all on TikTok, it's actually really creepy. And then they've created this long staircase where you can like basically walk up, which I'm assuming the animal walks up, and when it gets to the end, it's where it's basically slaughtered. So they've got the stage prepared, right? And it's right opposite Masjid al-Aqsa, where the third temple is supposed to be.
Right.
And so the people saying this are obviously really extremist people that believe in the third temple or whatever. Mm. But a lot of people are saying when this ritual is basically created, when it's done, it's the ashes of the red heifer are going to purify some of the people that do it. And then apparently it awakens their Messiah.
No way.
I swear.
What Messiah?
obviously a lot of people believe that the Messiah that they're looking for is the Antichrist, because it's not
the real Messiah.
I don't know.
Dajjal, you're talking about Dajjal.
No,
right
I
now.
Don't know if it's Dajjal, but it's, a lot of Christians believe that this ritual is going to awaken the Antichrist, and they believe that this ritual is going to bring forth their Messiah. Do you understand? And they've every time that they've tried to do this ritual, an army has stopped them. So before it was Constantinople, then it was, I don't even know the science, the history of that. You guys can do the history. Is it Levantine? My God, on I am. Yeah, you've got to figure it out. But the point is, it really scared me. Then he was talking about how there's a hadith, right? This one I can verify because I checked. In which basically a woman will get rid of what's inside her and remove it, essentially, meaning a baby. So then they were like alluding to how abortion is going to become widespread. And I was like, that's so strange.
No, shall I make you laugh today? My uncle phones my mum and he says that like a baby has been found right next to his house in Burra. So mum's like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, he goes, a baby's been found. Where was the baby found? In a toilet.
So
baby
sad.
Was found in the toilet.
That's so sad.
That is really sad. And then I was like, are they gonna keep it? And then he was like to his wife, like, we can't keep the baby.
Wait, where did they keep the where did they find the baby?
In the toilet.
In what, her toilet?
So you know they have like outside toilet. Someone's only gone and put the baby in the outside toilet. But luckily the baby was fine.
Oh, that's good.
So they rescued the baby. And obviously I was like, oh, are they going to keep it? My mum was like, no, they're not going to keep it. But someone's come to take the baby.
Oh, that's
to look
so
after
sad.
The baby. But it got me thinking about what you just said about women giving birth and leaving their babies.
Oh, I can't find it, guys. It's really annoying. But yeah, essentially that's what he was alluding to. And it just really creeped me out. And then I saw this other video of another sheikh talking about basically all of the minor signs have come true. There's only one or two left.
What about the inanimate objects talking? And the
no, but that's
talking.
A major sign.
That's minor.
Well, okay, maybe that's the minor ones that haven't come out.
And what about the Euphrates River?
What if the inanimate objects talking is the TV?
Yeah, but what about the animals?
And the phones.
What about the animal?
I don't know about animals talking.
Did it say inanimate or animate objects talking?
But what I'm trying to make you understand is the fact that some of the minor signs happened towards... It's a spectrum, but it happened towards the time of the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and where Umar was and all
right,
that stuff.
All right, honey, sue me. Just, you know, adding a bit of devil's advocacy.
I'm just saying, that really creeped me out.
Okay, listen.
And
so
I don't want to be around
you, can I ask you a question? What are they? What's the purpose of this third temple?
So the purpose of the third temple, should we Google it? You think I'm joking?
No, I know
you
it's
think
happening.
I'm
but,
having a laugh.
But I just want to know how this ties into the Dajjal. Because I thought the Dajjal was in, do you know what I mean? I thought that all the minor signs were to happen, then the Dajjal comes. But we haven't
No, but
seen...
I don't think the Dajjal is coming.
Oh, you think that they're just preparing for
Yeah,
him?
I just think they're preparing for something. They don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
I really don't think they know what's coming. Right, so the end of time prophecy. The other issue with the third temple, yeah.
What's the third temple about? Can someone educate me? Because I would actually love to know. Third temple of Solomon. It's a hypothetical rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. It would succeed Solomon's temple and the second temple. End of time prophecy. Why is the third temple so important? So this is messianicbible.com.
Oh, God. Why are you taking... information from the Bible.
Ezekiel 37:28. Do you want to know what it says? All right, maybe not. Jewish voices of ministries? No. Bro, there's bear stuff on this third temple, you know.
Oh, okay, guys. I'm not even going to
No,
waste
I found
time.
It. The red heifer.
Yeah.
The third temple. And
you guys need
days.
To Google it.
Okay, look. Okay, all right. So there was a first temple of Solomon that was the red heifer. With the birth of the red heifer, one of the most important prerequisite of building the third temple is met. So the Bible clearly teaches that a new temple, the third temple, will be built at some point in time so that the number of prophecies concerning the second coming of
the Messiah
would be fulfilled. The first temple was the one that Solomon built, which was destroyed. The second was built after the Jews returned from Babylonian captivity. Bro, what the hell? I need something about the third temple.
I'm telling you now, the third
temple. Why is it so biblical?
It is, though. It's biblical for everyone. Even the Christians are scared.
So it's an Old Testament prophecy. That's what it is. Was the Temple of Solomon real or myth? This is on Islam Q&A.
It was real, though.
So answer one. So there's three possible answers. According to Jewish narrations, David, or Dawood, peace be upon him, was the one who laid the foundations for building the temple, but he died before he could begin its constructions. His son, Suleiman, is the one who undertook the building of the temple atop Mount Moriah, which is known as the Plateau of the Sanctuary. This is the place where Masjid al-Aqsa and the Dome of the Rock are located. Mm-hmm. Secondly, after the death of Suleiman, peace be upon him, his children disputed and his kingdom was divided into two kingdoms, each of which were ruled by one of the sons of Suleiman. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says, the Jews look forward to bringing the Jewish people together in Palestine, restoring the Jewish state, rebuilding the temple, and establishing the throne of David in Jerusalem once more to be ruled by a descendant of David. End quote. Several decades after that, the captive Jews in Babylon were allowed to return to Jerusalem, so they returned and rebuilt the temple. Then the temple was destroyed again at the hands of Titus, the son of the Roman Emperor Vespasian. And then in 135 CE, the time of Emperor Hadrian, the city was destroyed completely and the Jews were expelled from it. A new city was built in its place, which was called Aelia Capitolina. It continued to be known by this name until the Muslims entered it during the caliphate of the second caliph, Umar ibn al-Khattab, may Allah be pleased with him, when it became known as Al-Qudus or Beit al-Maqdis. In 313 CE, the Emperor Constantine embraced Christianity and began to build churches. The Church of the Resurrection was the first church to be built during that period, and the site of the temple became a rubbish dump to spite the Jews. The Jews were scattered throughout the earth because of their treachery, their killing of the prophets, and their disobedience towards God, as the Jews themselves say. So they went to Arabia, Iraq, Egypt, and Europe, and the Jews forgot Jerusalem and forgot the temple until the 19th century, when they began to leaf through the pages of history looking for any Jewish claims that would justify their return to Jerusalem. The first Zionist conference was held in the city of Basel in Switzerland in 1897 with the aim of establishing a national homeland for the Jews in Palestine so that they would be able to rebuild their temple. The Jews claim that the Wailing Wall, which is located on the western side of Masjid al-Aqsa, is part of the remains of the Temple of Solomon. The Jews claim that the restoration of their kingdom only be brought about by returning to Jerusalem and rebuilding the temple. They also claim that Al-Masjid al-Aqsa is built on the ruins of the temple. This means that there is no alternative to destroying Masjid al-Aqsa in order to rebuild the temple, and that the kingdom of the Jews cannot be established unless that happens. They also claim that the temple is the holiest place on the face of the earth. This is the brief story of the temple as the Jews believe in it. Oh my God, it just goes on and on and on.
But my point is, my spidey senses are tingling. and they're tingling for a reason. Anyway, now we move on to Musa alayhi salam.
If anyone in the comment section can explain the temple to us, please go ahead.
Please, I'm going to watch a TikTok video tonight, but I'm telling you.
Because I don't know what it means. I keep seeing this stuff about
there's
temple,
apparently
temple.
A secret. There's something like, secret underneath the temple, apparently.
Are they trying to get rid of Al-Aqsa?
Obviously, they're trying to get rid of Al-Aqsa.
To build the temple.
Of course. Because it's on... where Al-Aqsa is where the temple was before.
So it's on that...
Furthermore, they're doing building works under Al-Aqsa so it can drop.
So you know that whole complex?
Yes. That really, not the dome.
The nice, peaceful compound.
Not the dome.
Oh, just Al-Aqsa.
Just Al-Aqsa. Apparently, they're drilling underneath Al-Aqsa to cause instability, but we don't know. But that's what they've said. Anyway. Right, we are going to teach you the story of Musa, alayhi salam. When I read the story, I was like, I read this when I was a child. Mm. And now it's like, let my people go.
Oh my God, I love this story, Musa!
Okay, people, let's sit down, get yourself a cup of tea. Are you on a walk right now? What are you doing? Okay, guys, let's go. So Musa alayhi salam was born at the time of Fir'aun. Fir'aun, can I just say, is one of the most evil people in this entire world to ever exist. Did you know that?
He Slowly.
And when he was about to die, Fir'aun, and he was in the sea, which obviously you're going to know in the story, guys, Jibreel alayhi salam was so scared that he was going to repent.
Yeah.
So he threw dust in his mouth.
But I heard that's a weak narration, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, that's what I'm going to say.
Because that's how merciful Allah is.
Yeah, and Jibreel knows that Allah would probably forgive him.
Yeah. Oh no, that's so horrible.
But he was so angry.
Jibreel was fuming.
Because Fir'aun, what he was saying is horrible. Anyway, let's carry on. So Musa was born at the time of Fir'aun, which was the most politically charged time of history. The pharaoh of Fir'aun of Egypt, basically, was the dominant power in the land. He was incredibly powerful that he even referred to himself as a god.
Oh,
and nobody were able to dispute this. He would set up class distinctions, divide the people into groups and tribes, and set them up against one of each other. The Jews, the children of Israel, were put at the lowest level of Egyptian society. They were the slaves and the servants. The family of Musa alayhi salam was from amongst the children of Israel.
Mm-mm.
A short while before Prophet Musa alayhi salam was born, Fir'aun was told that the boy from Bani Israel will soon be born, at whose hands Fir'aun's kingdom would be destroyed. On hearing this, the cruel king ordered his soldiers that every male child born to the Bani Israel should be killed.
Doesn't that remind you of Voldemort?
Yeah.
When he was trying to kill all the...
What's that thing that Voldemort's...
Harry Potter. Because there was a prophecy.
You can be...
There was a prophecy in
touched.
Harry Potter. And then at one point, Voldemort thought that the kid that's going to kill him was Neville Longbottom.
Oh, Neville. All right, we digress. The soldiers of Fir'aun periodically.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, calm down. Search the houses of Israelites so as to carry out the orders. So basically, all the soldiers are basically following Fir'aun's orders. They're going into everyone's yard trying to kill up all the babies that are boys. Do you get it? Okay.
His mom puts
so
him
Morse's
in the river.
So Morse's mother, shush, man.
Morse, I just love this story.
Okay, so shut up and listen.
Okay, fine.
So Musa alayhi salam's mother prepared a plan for him. When she heard the approach of the soldiers, she took Musa alayhi salam out in the basket and placed him in the River Nile behind her house. In the Holy Quran, it's mentioned that in these words, so we sent inspiration to the mother of Moses to basically put him in the river and to trust us, tawakkal. That's something amazing, isn't it?
She used to attach him to like a piece of rope, isn't it? So basically, in order to hide him whenever the men were coming to the house, she put him in the river and just let it go down the stream, but it'll be attached to something.
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? So that, and then each time the baby will come back.
Why does it not say that?
But yet? I think one time the basket went down the stream.
No, that's not true.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, because she's willingly given her baby up.
No,
that's from the movie.
No, it's not.
It's from the Let My People Go movie.
It's not from the movie.
It is. It's not true.
I have to Google it.
Kaltun's making up.
I'm not making it up.
Okay, I'm going to carry on while Kaltun looks for us. Okay, so Musa alayhi salam's mother, basically, so in the Holy Quran, it's mentioned in these words. So we sent this inspiration to the mother of Moses. Suckle thy child, but when thou hast fears about
right.
him cast away. Yeah, I told you, this isn't the Quranic story.
No, but there was something about a rope.
I don't know about a rope. But anyway, listen. Right, Musa alayhi salam's mother has prepared a plan for him. And when she heard the approach of the soldiers, she took Musa alayhi salam out in his basket and placed him in the River Nile behind her house. In the Holy Quran, it's mentioned in these words, so we sent inspiration to mother of Moses. And basically, in this ayah, it states that the inspiration was that she basically put her child in the basket into the river, but fear not nor grieve, for we shall restore him to thee and we shall make him one of our messengers. So it's the idea that she had tawakkal in Allah and she just did it. She gave away her baby to the river. Okay. The basket in which the Prophet Musa alayhi salam was put in by his mother floated towards the palace of Fir'aun, where his men fished it out and brought the baby to him. He wanted to kill the baby immediately, suspecting that it might be a child of Bani Israel. But his wife, Asiya is such a beautiful name. But his wife, Asiya, who was a pious woman, stopped him by doing this. They did not have children of their own, so she asked him to adopt the child. Fir'aun agreed to his wife, Asiya's request, then called some women to feed the crying child. Yet the baby refused milk from all the women who came to feed him, except his own mother.
Look at the hardship that Musa was placed under just from the time of his birth.
Crazy.
So much. There's a rampant, crazy, maniacal man going around killing all the newborn boys. On top of that, his mum's forced to put him in the river. Unbeknownst to her where he's going, unbeknownst to anyone if he's going to live or die, he winds up at the doorstep of the person that's trying to kill him. And just by the mercy of Allah, Asiya is the one that discovered and said, nope, this one's mine.
But now his mother's with him now, feeding him milk from her breast. How amazing is that?
No, they had to go to her.
No, in here it says, right? That he baby refused milk from all women who came to feed him, except his own mother.
So they had to, basically what happened was, Musa was grown, like he wasn't accepting milk from Asiya. He wasn't accepting milk from anyone. Allah said that he was going to return the child to his mum. Yeah, so that's why she put the baby in the river, because she relied on what Allah said, that the baby will come back to her. She get it? Did. And then what happened was, he turns up at Fir'aun, Asiya says, nope, the baby's mine. He's hungry. No one can feed this baby. So then what does Asiya do? She has to go around to find somebody that's able to best breastfeed this baby. Eventually, his mum recognises him straight away. She feeds the baby. The baby is fine.
Right, thank you for clarifying the
but
story.
Then,
that
but
we're
then, but then, what Allah said has come true, that the baby has been returned. But the mum can't say nothing.
Do you want to read the story, Colton?
The mum can't say nothing. I just love this story.
So can you wait and listen to the story? Right, so Prophet Musa alayhi salam, like Colton explained, his mum came to him and he accepted the breast milk from her. Right? In this way, Allah Almighty rejoined the mother and child in the place of Fir'aun, who is the greatest enemy of her son. The Prophet Musa alayhi salam grew up in Fir'aun's home and was familiarized with the state of affairs. When he alayhi salam reached adulthood, once involved in a fight between an Israelite and an Egyptian, resulted in killing the latter recklessly. Prophet Musa alayhi salam went to the Madian, where he married Safwa, the daughter of Prophet Shu'aib. After staying some time in Madian, is it Madian?
Madian.
M-A-D-Y-A-N.
Wait. When did we get to Madian? What happened after the suckling?
That he grew up.
Oh, okay. So he grew up
and Musa was now established in the house of Fir'aun. He knew about the state of affairs. He saw this fight.
So does he see Fir'aun as his dad?
I don't know. But when he reached adulthood, he was once involved in a fight.
Because in the Prince of Egypt, I think he's.
Colton, can you? I can't read this story with this girl when she's referencing Bible stories.
I watched the play.
Let my people go.
Oh my God. And,
you know. So do you get the story where we're at?
Yeah.
So Musa at this point, guys, this is atrocious, but we carry on, okay? Musa at this point, he's grown up, he's an adult now. He gets into a fight, he sees a fight between an Israelite and an Egyptian, which results in one of them getting killed, basically. Mm-mm. Prophet Musa went to an area called Madian, where he married Safwa.
So he was exiled at this point.
No, that hasn't come up yet. Can you just wait?
So he's just killed someone. He's got to go out into the... He can't be, do you know what I mean? He's killed someone.
So when they say once involved in a fight between an Israelite and an Egyptian, results the killing the latter recklessly.
Yeah, he killed him.
Anyway, so someone died, basically. So he killed someone.
Yeah, he killed him. And then he had to go.
So then the Prophet Musa, alayhi salam, basically he went to an area called Madian, where he married a woman called Safwa, who was the daughter of Prophet Shu'aib, alayhi salam. After staying some time in Madian, he left to return to Egypt. On their way to Egypt in a severe winter night, Prophet Musa alayhi salam and his wife, who had lost their way, saw a fire in the distance. Mm. The Prophet Musa alayhi salam told his wife to stay where she was, and he went to the fire thinking he would bring some of it back. When Musa reached near the fire, he saw the flames were coming from a green tree and there was no one present. While Musa alayhi salam looked around in surprise, he suddenly heard a voice saying, "Oh Musa, I am your Lord." Ooh. The voice then asked him to throw him a stick, to throw his stick onto the ground. At once it changed into a serpent, which scared him. Musa alayhi salam was then commanded to lift the snake without any fear. As he did so, it changed back into a stick. And then he was told to put his hand under his armpit, and when he drew it out again, his hand glowed with a bright light like the sun. The divine voice said to him, "Oh Musa, these are the two great signs of your Lord. Go back to Fir'aun and his people and invite them towards your Lord." After getting these signs from the Almighty, Musa went back to Fir'aun and told him that he, alayhi salam, is the messenger of Allah Almighty, and for that he has proof. Musa, alayhi salam, threw his stick on the ground and it changed into a snake. The miracle frightened Fir'aun, and he turned to his ministers for advice. They told him that Prophet Musa, alayhi salam, was just a good magician, and that their own magicians could easily perform such tricks. Then Fir'aun called all the great magicians to his court so they could do the same tricks as Musa alayhi salam did. When they were told what had to be done, they were not worried. They threw pieces of rope on the ground and those cords began to wiggle like snakes. But when Prophet Musa cast his stick down, his serpent ate them all up. He basically ate all the pieces of rope. The magicians immediately realized that this was no magic but a miracle and prostrated, saying, "We believe in the faith of Musa." Allah Almighty told Prophet Musa to warn Fir'aun that he would punish him and his people if they continued in their ways and do not accept our faith. But Fir'aun was too proud to listen to that warning. So Fir'aun was punishing him and his followers, the country was hit by famine. Mm. Swarms of locusts ate away the crops. The river Nile flooded its banks, causing great destruction. The people were afflicted with lice and tumors. When all of this happened, the people rushed to Prophet Musa alayhi salam, asking him to pray for their relief and promise to follow his religion. But when they were cured and the situation improved, they returned to their idol worshipping.
Oh dear.
Musa alayhi salam gathered the people of Bani Israel and they left for Palestine. When Fir'aun learned of their escape, he followed them with a huge army. When Musa alayhi salam with the people of Israel reached the Red Sea, they saw Fir'aun. So Musa gathered the people of Bani Israel and they left for Palestine. When Fir'aun learned of their escape, he followed them with a huge army. When Musa alayhi salam with the people of Bani Israel reached the Red Sea, they saw Fir'aun approaching towards them and were sure that they were going to be killed. Yet Prophet Musa alayhi salam struck the waters of the sea with his stick and the waters parted, making a dry path. The people crossed safely. When Fir'aun saw the path...
You know me, I always conflate this story.
Okay,
but listen, I always get confused because you know that we've got the story of Musa as it is in the Quran. I've seen the Prince of Egypt. I always get confused.
It's not let my people go, let it go. It's not real.
Paula, like, I get confused.
Tori is thinking, she went, did you go see it in theatre or something?
I did. I went to see it in theatre and I watched it on TV. And I really like Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston's rendition of "You Will When You Believe." Okay, anyway, go on. But you know, there were so many inconsistencies in that play. He split the sea.
Right, so Musa alayhi salam struck the waters of the sea with his stick and the waters parted, making a dry path. The people crossed safely. When Fir'aun saw the path, he entered the sea at the head of his army. But while he was in the middle of the sea, the water suddenly closed around him and his men. In this way, Fir'aun and his army, they drowned and died in the river or the sea. It's not the river, is it? They died in the sea.
The end.
And that is the story of Musa alayhi salam. That's taken me literally 30 minutes to read because Kultuan kept interrupting me because she thinks she knows the story. But really, she knows a story that is not
I'm confused,
the
guys.
Real story.
You know a miracle. Anyway, you can achieve.
This episode.
You will believe.
What did I say to you? Every 2 hours, you have to remember Allah. Go and read your istighfar right now. Anyway, what lessons have you learned from Musa alayhi salam's story?
Musa had a very tough life.
He really did. And he's the most mentioned prophet in the Quran. One of the.
He's just had a very tough life. He endured a lot. He had like a horrible ruler who was just out to get him from jail.
He had one of the worst rulers.
He was just, but I feel sorry for Musa. But you know what? He got favoured. He became a prophet. He got the prophethood. He got his little, he got a chat with Allah. Like, not a lot of prophets can say they've had that.
Oh my God, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Amazing.
And also,
imagine the miracle of seeing Allah's face.
You know, Musa and Adam alayhi salam have a bit of an argument. Do you know that?
No.
They have an argument.
About what?
Musa's annoyed because basically he's saying, Adam, this is all your fault, sort of thing. Like, this whole worldly test that we're in. And then Adam's like, you know what? That's actually not my fault. Like, do you know what I mean? You can't blame me for this.
Are you sure this is fact?
I'm being deadly serious.
You
can't blame me.
Denial.
Adam came with a very comprehensive argument that this was Allah's will, that it's got nothing to do with him.
When did they have Musa, this argument?
Don't worry, innit? If you want to go and research it, research it.
So, I'm sorry, but you can't be saying that.
So then anyway, Musa alayhi salam's like, listen, you put us through this. Like, I'm literally at my wit's end here. I'm going through it. Do you know what I mean? And I blame you. And then the Prophet said, Adam alayhi salam won the argument because he said that this is part of a
divine decree.
Divine decree.
Narrated by Abu Huraira.
Aww,
cat. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi salam said, he is though.
I know.
Right?
The father of the cat.
The father of the cat, how cute. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi salam said, Adam alayhi salam and Moses alayhi salam argued with each other. Moses said to Adam, oh Adam, you are our father who disappointed us and turned us out of paradise. Bruh, he's talking to Adam like that.
He's fuming. I'd be fuming too if I didn't know that this was divine. Do you know what I mean?
Of course it's divine though.
No, but I'm saying
in
like,
the last
but you know what it is? Like, okay, look, yeah, you have to look at it like this. The prophets before Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam went through a madness. They suffered to spread the message of Islam. They suffered for it. They were tortured.
They all
for
did
it.
Though.
Do you know what I mean? But listen, the earlier ones in particular suffered. Do you get it? So Moses is at his wit's end. He's like, Adam, this is your fault.
So then he
you
goes.
You ate the apple.
Listen. Oh, Adam, you are our father who disappointed us and turned us out of paradise. Then Adam said to him, oh, Moses, Allah favored you with his talk to you directly. And he wrote the Torah for you with his hand. Do you blame me for the action which Allah has written in my fate 40 years before my creation? Adam confuted Moses, says it twice. The Prophet ﷺ added, repeating the statement 3 times. What does confuted mean?
I'm trying to say Adam won. Adam ﷺ won that argument.
When did they see each other?
Might have been a dream, might have been something unseen related.
That's bugging me now. I need to know where they've seen each other.
Some unseen business holder we're not supposed to know. It's the unseen world. I'm joking, I have no idea, but I just, yeah. I thought it was quite funny that they had a bit of a tussle.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, guys, did you enjoy that?
I love the story of Musa, though.
I'm going to listen to it properly. I just think we're really shit storytellers.
Do you know what? I reckon if we memorised the story and really understood it and told it from our brains.
I think it would be better.
Be better.
Should we tell the story of Musa again? No.
Who knows?
Oh my God. We're going to end the episode there. I'm so exhausted at this girl and her singing. I told you guys, every 2 hours we have to remember Allah so our hearts are sakeen, so we don't delay our salads, okay? It's not a dalil, but it's just an experiment that I've done on myself. And, you know, we're going to end the episode there. Kultan, have you got anything else to add except from Whitney Houston singing? Kultan is dazed.
Do you know what it is? It's me hormones at the moment.
Guys, wallahi, this period comes so quickly and I don't want to be next to you. So mine comes in the last 10 days.
It won't.
Be gone.
It won't.
Be gone.
No,
I don't want to touch you. I don't want you near me.
What are you trying to say? I'm impure.
You're very much impure
you're
right
so
now.
Rude.
I don't want your endorphins to catch up with mine.
Guys, we're going to end it there because do you know what?
When you believe.
It's coming to the portion of the
It's 10 o'clock at night, guys.
Where, you know, yeah, it's really late at night. I've got a 9 a.m. meeting.
Well, lie, me too. I've got an 11 p.m. assessment to do. Anyway, guys, I'm going to have to go. I just want to say I love you guys.
I love you guys.
I hope the third week of Ramadan is going well for you guys. And we're going to see you
next week. Wait.
No,
in 2 weeks' time. We've recorded so much for you guys.
We have one more episode to record, which is the Laylatul Qadr episode.
And then we're out, guys.
And then we're out.
We're taking part in the Great Reset.
The Great Reset, which we're going to talk about in our new episode coming out, hopefully, inshallah.
Today.
In the last week.
The Great Reset episode is coming up. Has come out on YouTube today.
Yeah. But I'm saying the episode on Laylatul Qadr is the last episode we're doing in the Ramadan series.
Yeah, and then that's it, guys. Me and Hada, we're off. We're off to
do our ibadah.
Yeah, we're going to go and get.
Going to go get the great. I'm trying to get myself.
I'm trying to get some rewards out here. I'm trying to get my erasure.
And then also the final episode, which is going to be the Eid episode, is with a special guest.
Okay, so this Friday, guys, me and Hada are hosting an event for the House of Praises charity.
/ Human Appeal.
Human Appeal is also involved. And what they're doing is they're organising an iftar evening. There's going to be a panel discussion.
It's going to be fun. It's girly. It's
wholesome. There's going to be some games. It's going to be so good. There's going to be loads of people we know that are already coming. So I'm excited to see.
Anyway, if you're coming, please come up to us. We want to give you a hug.
Yeah, and also please message us as well, just so we know we're going to see you in advance, because sometimes I don't like surprises.
Yay! make sure you download this episode, you like it, you do everything you need to do, and make sure that you follow and support the Patreon ladies. We love you guys so much.
And goodbye.
Bye. Who knows what miracles?
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.